This is Forrest Elise interviewing Sarah Rowland for the Creative Push Projects. It is September 19th at 2:40. Okay, so briefly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm from California. I grew up there with my family, and until I went away to college, I went to Stanford first, and then I moved back home and started teaching art and English, and got a master's in teaching. But all the time, I always was drawing and painting. And I moved to Colorado for a couple of years, and it was there that I knew that I wanted to have a baby and that I knew I wanted to go to graduate school. And so that's kind of what happened next.
Great. So if you can take us back as far as possible,
like,
you know, just previous to conception, if you were planning on having your family, where you were in your life. Just out of graduate school, graduate school, all that stuff matters.
Yeah.
And you can give us as much information as possible. We can always edit it down.
Sure.
And that's it. Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, in 2008, my mom was diagnosed with cancer. And I was, like, very much with her as a part of the diagnosis and those doctor's appointments. And one part of after we left that doctor's appointment, it was just her and I in the car. And I remember I, like, grabbed her hand and I just was like, "Mom, if you just beat this thing, I'm gonna give you a grandbaby, and then we'll just get to play with that baby and for the rest of our lives." And she kind of laughed and she was like, "Okay, you have a deal." And that's kind of what happened. That was 2008, like I said. And another thing I had going on is that I really wanted to get an MFA in painting. And so it was just sort of like working out the timing of those two things. So I got into graduate school first, and then I got pregnant at the end of my second year of graduate school. It was a three-year program. And you know, I basically, as soon as I had decided that I wanted to have a baby, I was ready whenever. And so we tried for probably about a year. That was infrequent, I guess I would say. But finally, after much tabulation of data and cross-referencing various smartphone apps and things like this, it all worked out, and I got pregnant. So it was planned, and you know, the not getting pregnant was hard. It was really hard. But also, my religious faith is a big part of who I am, and so it just seemed like every time that, like, the evidence of that blood was right, like, that resonated with my religious faith, and so it that was, like, encouraging in a way. And I was just like, you know, it'll happen when it's supposed to. And, like, the timing was amazing because I got pregnant and I was wrapping up my degree, and I had the baby 2 weeks after I defended my thesis. And so it, like, literally couldn't have been timed any better. And so then I had the remainder of the semester to, you know, to just focus on being a new mom and that kind of thing. And So what next?
Well, just around here, were you still teaching then, that second half?
So my last year, the first semester, I actually had a 50% TA-ship. So I was teaching a class, and I was also working with Dan Collins and doing, I was, like, TA-ing his teaching methodologies class, and then also I was coordinating all of the, like, core area TAs. So, and doing all that supply ordering and stuff.
I couldn't do anything when I was pregnant. But anyway, let's get on topic. So, yeah. I'll get you way off topic. Okay, so you're pregnant. Let's start there.
Okay, so, you know, I was I was feeling a little weird, but I wasn't sure exactly what it was going to be yet, because if you'll recall, we had an opportunity, all the grad students in the program, to take a weekend at the Biltmore and to paint a wine barrel for charity there. And so I was on deck. I was at the Biltmore to enjoy a weekend of like extravagantly delicious food and drink all for free in like luxury hotel setting. And like the night before, I just was like, Friday night, I get there, start painting, and there's just all this free food and free wine, and like I just couldn't eat it. Like I couldn't. I'm like, this is free wine, I should be loving this, but I just couldn't. And so I was like, this is weird. So the next morning, I took a pregnancy test. It was 5:30 in the morning, and I was just like, holy shit, it's positive. And it was so good. So good. And oh, so good. So yeah.
All right. And so then you couldn't partake or didn't
know? No. And then I was like immediately feeling very, like very weird, like stomach weird. And I never was like super ill, thankfully, but I just, like, if I wasn't pregnant, I would have been an amazing anorexic. Like, I had no desire to eat anything. I could smell everything. And I just, like, every time, I knew I had to eat in order to feel better. And it was just, like, such a chore. But it was worth it, because, I, you know, it wasn't about me. It was about Henry, my son. So it was like, okay, even though I feel like I'm going to barf if I eat this chicken sandwich, like, let's do this.
Did you put on weight then, or?
I actually had, like, really the most average pregnancy ever. Like, I just hit the norm the whole way. So it was just an average amount of weight gain. I think I gained 18 pounds, like, over the course of the whole thing, and that was like up until when I was admitted to the hospital. And so that's really 8.5 pounds of that was my son. So that's really, like, that's very modest, I feel. And it wasn't really for lack of trying, especially at the end. I ate Cold Stone's ice cream every day. I just was like, I'm not gaining weight. I really need to capitalize on this opportunity. I'm not going to get this kind of ice cream opportunity again. So I did. So my parents actually came into town. They actually got an apartment here. They live in California, but they got an apartment here in Arizona while I was pregnant, and then while my son was newly born. And so I just, my dad would take me out for ice cream. Was really sweet, really, really nice. Yeah.
So how were you emotionally? Where was your head pregnant-wise?
Well, in a lot of ways, I'm kind of just a very practical person. And so it was, on the one hand, just about, okay, let's make sure I graduate. Let's take care of my professional business. But what ended up happening was, outside of the professional realm, is that I just fell in love. You know? Just was like, it was unparalleled in any experience I've had before. And it just resonated with me. So much in comparison to, like, the love that I had in my family with my parents and my brother growing up. And it just was so, so good and so right in that way. And that really started to change me in a lot of really important ways. Ways that I still am, like, just learning to understand, actually. But I, like I said, I recognized a love there that I hadn't, that I think that some people experience that in marriage. And maybe I did, but maybe just on my end. Like I did not otherwise experience anything remotely close to that in marriage. So, that made me bond with my son in a way that was, I think, more immediate and more powerful than maybe some other mothers. Like, you know, I've heard other women's stories of like getting to know their child and that kind of thing, but I immediately felt that I knew him. And that knowledge was so very real, I've never doubted it. And that kind of confidence in love was definitely something I hadn't experienced since my childhood and since, you know, outside of my relationship with my parents. So that was that was good.
That's a really beautiful way of discussing that, you know, that intense feeling of
like, yeah, and it was only more so when he came, when I had him. Only more so. Really good.
Did you feel like, I felt like with my son August that I really knew him, you know, inside and out, like
yeah, I don't know how else to say it.
So you had the perfect pregnancy.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course there were challenges. Like when I was about 4 months pregnant, I really started having some crazy back pains, like sciatica pain. And what had happened is, like, as my pelvis was spreading, as it does, as it should, like one half of it, like, kind of twisted forward. And so, oh my God, it was so painful. I remember I was like trying to be super healthy. So I was at prenatal yoga, and I think that that's actually when it happened. Like, and I just was, you know, trying to rock the triangle pose or something like that. And I was like, oh my gosh. And the pain was just like, it was already painful, but that just kind of like pushed it to a new level. And I remember just kind of like laying down on my mat and crying because it just was, it hurt so much. And I'm not a pain crier really. So I was just, I'm like, this is a problem. So like I went home and then ultimately went to the doctor, not too long after. And he wanted to prescribe me Vicodin. And I know that it's very common for women to take Vicodin while they're pregnant, but I found it really easy and something I was really passionate about to kind of just like, you know, follow the suggested guidelines. Like I tend to be a rule follower. And so I was like, we've got some rules here. This is perfect. I'm going to follow him. And I really didn't want to take the Vicodin. So luckily I was able to get some physical therapy and that really helped. But I remember walking around ASU as a grad student and like having to cross the street, like right by the chuck wagon there or the chuck box. And it took me the entire green light to walk across the street. It's like a 2-lane road. And I just am like shuffling along and sorority girls are like streaking past me doing their like, I'm wearing a bikini to class. And I'm like, I'm pregnant. And they're kind of looking at me like, did she know that that was going to happen? And I'm like, in fact, it was planned. And so I, like, actually, it was super hilarious. That was a super hilarious aspect of my pregnancy, was to be a student at ASU during that period. yeah. So that was that. And but other than that, I mean, everything else was perfectly fine.
Did you have a plan?
My birth plan was to have Hank at the hospital and to try and like put off drugs as much as possible. But I was in labor for 24 hours and so I ended up getting an epidural. And I was glad about that. But how that happened was that I went into labor at 4:30 in the morning, and I remember just, you know, I laid in bed for an hour with contractions, and they were about, I'd say they were about every 6 or 7 minutes at that point. And I was just like, I think this is really happening. And then, you know, once there was like an irregularity to it, I was like, okay, yeah, this is happening. And I was really glad, because I basically was, I had a doctor's appointment that day with my doctor to schedule an induction, so, or inducement, or whatever you call it. And so I was glad that my body was getting this started on its own. And I stayed home most of the day, I stayed home really about 12 hours. And so, that was good, 'cause then I got to eat something from time to time. I walked around the block, like, it was going out of style, very slowly, of course, and, you know, tried to do all of the things that I, you know, knew that I could possibly do to facilitate labor. And so, but basically I just was kind of like stalling just a little bit slower than like whatever the recommendation is to then go to the hospital and check in. And so I was like, I could tell, I knew I was laboring, but I knew that I was at kind of a pretty like shallow status quo. But I was getting tired, and I knew, so my doctor's appointment time came up, and I just called him and was like, hey, I'm having contractions. And they were like, you should go to the hospital then. So that's what I did. And, I had the baby in Mesa. So, you know, I went and checked in, and they were very professional, but I could tell they wanted to send me home. But they didn't. And so they were not, I felt really vulnerable. I felt like I was going to need to make decisions for myself. And I wasn't really going to have anyone really like on my team supporting me in those decisions. And so then when the nurse was in, like, admittance was a little bit off-putting. And so I basically, like, labor almost stopped, and I started running a fever. And I remember just, like, laying in the bed, and I was cold because of the fever. And I just, like, my body has always been really responsive to my emotional state. And so I just knew, I'm like, I got to get out of here. Like, we got to move this on. But since I was running a fever, then they had to keep me. So, you know, worked out pretty well. So then once I got into like the delivery room, I really felt like I had a good rapport with my nurse. I liked her immediately. So that worked out. I mean, I'm not a dramatic person. And so she was kind of going to meet me at that practical way that I that I really appreciated that. I continued to labor, and it's getting later. Yes.
So why did you feel that you didn't have an advocate? Did you have women or your mother or your husband?
My parents came. My husband was there, but I mean, he was in the room, so he was physically present there, yeah. But he had been up really late the night before. Before I went into labor, he decided that he wanted to start his paternity leave, and he was betting on the fact that I wasn't going to go into labor on his first day of paternity leave. And so I think he just, you know, spent half the night watching pornography. And so then when, you know, he was on 2 or 3 hours of sleep. And so that was, you know, a limited engagement there. And so that kind of sucked. And so my parents were there, but they, as I've mentioned, are amazing human beings, and so they just wanted what I wanted. And so my mom was actually it, she wasn't there. They didn't get to the hospital, I guess it was until after I had been admitted. That's what happened. So I didn't see them then until I was in the delivery room already. And, I was up and out of bed in there and walking around and, or not, as contractions came and went. And, and my mom actually, she was there a lot of the time. But because my husband was there, she wasn't going to be. It would have only made things more complicated if she had been more assertive. And that was certainly a status quo of my marriage. So both she and I had learned our roles very well with regards to that over the years. And so what I ultimately decided, it was, like 10:30 at night now, and I decided that I wanted to progress things, so I decided to get Pitocin. And my mom actually, she had two babies, myself and my brother, and she had it with no pain medication induced. She had me in 7 hours and my brother in three. I mean, I was like, my mom is the toughest human being that I know. But then also, like, I have those genes, so I'm gonna rock this. I'm gonna see how this goes. So, but then of course with the Pitocin, I was like, wow, this is a whole different ball game. And I was already so tired. So from 4:30 a.m. contracting every 6 to 7 minutes all day long, to 10:30 p.m. And I made the decision that I wanted to have an epidural because I wanted my husband to go to sleep, and I wanted to be able to sit with my mom and, watch the contractions on the monitor and just be so happy about my baby coming. And that's what we did. And it was so good. Like that, hour or two that she and I just sat there, like holding hands and like getting ready for Hank. That was so good. And so the doctor and the nurse would, the nurse was there pretty much the whole time, and the doctor would come in and check and then leave and then come in and check and leave, and that was fine. None of that fazed me at all. And then it was time to push, and so that worked out great. I pushed for 45 minutes, which is a very short amount of time, and the nurse was kind of like, "Wow, like this is your first baby?" I'm like, "Yep. I don't mess around. Like, we're getting this done." And it was a little bit easier because I had the epidural. I think I maybe had a really good one. And I remember when I decided, this teeny tiny little anesthesiologist comes in, and she just was like a little ninja. She placed that epidural like in between two contractions that I had, and I could feel it immediately. And I think from what I've been told that like it was just the perfect amount because I could still feel everything that was going on, but the pain had subsided. And so when it came to pushing, like I still was able to be in touch with my body and what was going on because I could still feel some things. So that worked out really well. And I mean, it's such a blessing, really. Like I am so thankful for that because I've heard so many stories of situations where that was just not the case. And so Hank was born at 4:32 in the morning on Tuesday, February 26th in 2013. And he didn't really cry a lot when he was born, like right immediately, like how the babies do in the movies. And they were actually a little bit concerned because they thought that he may have aspirated some meconium. And so like So I didn't get to hold him right away, which that was like, that was disappointing. But also I was a little bit out of it, as I think is normal after having a baby. And so I remember just like laying there and like post-delivery, like the doctor's bedside manner was lacking. And, you know, she was stitching me up and she's just like, it's just like hamburger down here, she says to me. I just was like, I know. I just was, I still am just a little disturbed that she said that. But I just wasn't even mentally processing that. But I just thought that was unnecessary. And, you know, healed just fine and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
She was stitching you because you tore or because she gave you an episiotomy?
Both. So I was starting to tear and they gave me an episiotomy. And, you know, my son was in the 99th percentile for head size. So, you know, at least he'll be smart, right?
He can headbutt his way out of things.
Yeah, yeah, if nothing else, he can really use that head in so many different ways.
So was at that point, so you've had your baby, mm-hmm. you're recuperating.
Yeah, they're stitching me up. They're, like, finishing up with afterbirth and all that kind of stuff. And I just am watching Hank, like, across the room, but I can't do anything. And I can't go to him, and I'm even having trouble, like, just being like, I don't know what I'm supposed to say right now in order to get that kid over here. And, but also concerned because he was, like, kind of blue and, you know, because he wasn't crying. But I still just knew he was okay. I don't know. I can't explain it. I just knew that we needed each other. And another amazing blessing of my birth and then having a newborn is that, like, when it comes to breastfeeding, I am great at that, as it turns out. And I also had no problems ever breastfeeding. And so I don't know if, like, my body already knew it was on board in that department or what, but I was like, get that kid over here so I can nurse him, and that's what I did. And he went to sleep, and he slept for about 12 hours after that, and that was probably the best period of sleep he's had in his entire life, because he's not a sleeper. But that's kind of, that's how that worked. So, and then, you know, We just got to be together after that. I just, you know, remember holding him and, like, even in the picture of, like, me holding him and looking down at him in the crook of my arm, you know, I look at that face of mine and I'm just like, wow, that girl is dazed, so dazed. And, like, but also just, I mean, my heart was just exploding, like, in the best way possible. I actually felt like I had like an addition built onto my heart, like a house addition, and actually me and all of my experience had just moved into the addition, but the main house of the heart now just was for Hank.
That's an encaustic painting right there.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
So then how long were you in the hospital?
A really average amount. Again, I think like 2 nights. It's a little fuzzy since I was there overnight all night. And so I think it was 2 nights after that. So I guess altogether it was 3 nights. That has to have been it. But, and the, you know, the care in the hospital was okay. Like, I remember my shower was dirty. And I was like, my shower was dirty. And the nurse was kind of like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, can you please go look at it? And so, like, she went away and then came back. I was like, can you please look at the shower? Because I would really like to take a shower. And so finally she did, and she was, like, shocked that it, in fact, was dirty. And so then, but by this time, you know, I had Hank at 4:30 in the morning, and it was, like, 11:30 at night, and, like, cleaning crew is, like, coming in to get a new shower curtain, and I was so tired. I just wanted to sleep. And, that, and then also, you know, I had had the epidural at like 10:30 at night, and so I think like there was, I think it lasted for about maybe 12 or 14 hours, like some effects of it, like some pain numbing effects, but then of course it wore off and I wasn't offered any pain medicine, and I was not very comfortable. And so finally I thought, you know, I think I can have some of that. And so I asked him, like, can I have like an Advil or like a Tylenol or something? Because I didn't know what I could have. And again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I didn't want anything really heavy. But finally, I had a nurse who, it was the night nurse for that next night, who, so it was nighttime, like 8:30 or 9 at night, and she was like, you haven't had anything since the birth? And I was like, no. She's like, I'm bringing you some Percocet. I was like, thank you. I would like that. And so then I was much more comfortable after that. But, you know, like during the day, I was just like nursing Hank and holding him and looking at him, and you know, my husband did help with the diaper changing and that kind of stuff, and so that was good because especially since I didn't have any pain medication, I really didn't want to move around at all. and actually so that was like that first day, and then there was a night and then another day. And, like, my milk came in when I was in the hospital still. And it was, I remember waking up and just being like, oh, my goodness, this is not what I expected, but as I think exactly what is supposed to happen. And so that, you know, I feel like this anecdote sort of summarizes the breastfeeding experience, is that my son was born at 8 pounds in 8 ounces, and he didn't lose any weight in the hospital and gained 3 pounds the first 2 weeks of his life. And so he was a big little chunk.
So what was it that you hadn't expected? The size?
The size, the firmness, because I've always been so petite. And so I just was like, this is like the movies. Like, I never in my wildest dreams imagined that I would have breasts that were that big. And even now, like, I look back at pictures of myself and I'm just like, I don't recognize those anymore. And, but, you know, it all worked out. So it was kind of like this weird, like, third party. It was like me, Hank, and then the girls, you know? So that was you know, it was what it was. So it was like, if this is working, let's keep doing this. My son actually, he nursed for a really long time, you know, until he was a toddler, and it just always worked for us. And even still, even though he's been weaned for quite some time, he even still will say, Mama, nursing? And I'm like, no, kiddo, let's go cuddle. And he, like, I know that he needs that, you know, that physical closeness. And, like, I think he likes summertime because I wear shorts more and I'm home from work more. I teach high school, so I have, you know, a traditional teacher's schedule. And he just, like, if I'm sitting on the couch, he just puts his head on my lap and just, like, rubs his face on my legs. And I can tell he's just like, this is part of my home, is this. That's really nice. But, pretty quickly, of course, you know, as I mentioned, Hank and I like fell into the rhythm of breastfeeding, and he, I'm a tall person, and my whole side of the family, we're all tall, and we all have healthy appetites, and it would seem that Hank is falling into that category from birth. And so, because he was long and immediately large, and he's so tall for his age now, and tall and skinny, and so immediately it was like a defining factor that bonded Henry and I. And that separation from my husband was wonderful. And that it really helped me find a place, or I should say rediscover a place, where I knew I could make decisions for myself, and then now also for Hank, that provided for our long-term safety and happiness. And so I did. And so when Hank was about 9 months old, you know, I once again, you know, sort of like addressed some issues in the marriage with my husband. And for some reason, this time, he responded in a way that, like, actually acknowledged the words that I was saying, which was really weird, because that hadn't happened in the previous 8.5 years. And what I found was that I had so much distrust, and I actually found that I was angry when I really had never been. I'm not prone to anger in terms of my personality. And I knew that if I continued to stay in the marriage, that there was an essential part of myself that was going to cease to exist. And so in having Henry, I had reconnected with her, that me, and I liked her. And I had an unwavering conviction that my son was entitled to know that woman and to be loved by that woman for the rest of his life and beyond. And so again, to kind of circle back to, I mentioned my religious faith earlier, and I understood my own faith in an entirely different way, where the Christian story is about a baby boy who comes to this earth and changes everything. And I found myself in that same position, where this tiny, wriggly, smiley, goofy child was just absolutely putting everything right in the world. And it was all of a sudden so clear, like I could see myself in ways that I never had before, and I could understand things I had experienced in a different context. And I was so thankful for that, and emboldened by that. And so I'm divorced now.
Yeah, it sounds like you saved your life, really. You know, that's part of you that was dying. You know, you brought back to life.
I absolutely believe that. And I mean, I absolutely believe that that is divine provision. Just plain and simple. And, like, I shudder to think where I would be at now without that, and how I would be changed without that. And, you know, I don't think I would still be being able to make work, artwork, without that. And there's a lot of things I wouldn't be able to do. Really a lot. And a lot of people who have known me a short time and people who have known me literally my entire life, who I'm able to know now and be in community with, that just wouldn't have been possible otherwise. So, you know, that's that.
Yeah. It is interesting how having a child impacts the relationship or the marriage.
Sure.
You know, and some marriages, it brings them together. Or
Yeah. In fact, another eye-opening moment was recently a friend of mine was talking about how having her daughter, like when she sits with her daughter and her husband and she recognizes in the love that she has with her daughter, she recognizes the love she has for her husband in that love. And I just had the absolute opposite experience where I thought the love that I have for my son, there's nothing that I recognize for my marriage in this, just nothing.
Yeah. You've given us a really great story. I mean, I'm really grateful that you came and shared it with us. So we're putting these into themes, and we have 5 themes, and one of them is faith, and I think yours is a great fit for that theme. And normally I would ask at this point to our speakers to summarize, but I think that, you know, you really encapsulated your experience in a really meaningful way, like found the meaning in it, you know, which is,
oh yeah,
sometimes a lot of times with our storytellers it's like at the end here we like try to,
it's a little unresolved.
Yeah. With yours, like I feel like you really know
it's absolutely resolved. I feel like I get to stand now and look forward literally with my son in and to just be myself, and that, as it turns out, is not always a given, but it's how it should be. So it's good.
You keep saying these good ending lines. That was a good one.